If the NSA is listening, we can at least be entertaining. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
Mike Devers, in his book, said that I had a short attention span. Well, I was going to reply to that, but oh, what the hell? Let's move on to something else.
I feel like that all the time. Welcome back. Final hour on a Friday. Welcome to you live in Chicago, live in Missouri, live in Utah, live everywhere, and also on Red State Talk Radio. Shout out to you, Love and Liberty, you name it. And you know what? I'm just glad you're listening all around the globe. We have a lot of global listeners, and that always makes me happy. And Canada, too. Can't forget about you. So really appreciate that. And I've got a guest for this next segment of the show. On the heels of just talking about the Middle East, what's going on there. This ought to be very interesting. I'm actually happy to have Salih Hudaya on the show. And you are from the, and I want to get this right, the Eastern, see, I know, I told you, I'm like the name murder, East Turkestan National Awakening Movement in Washington, D.C. And I'd love to get your take. We have all kinds of different takes on the show. And what I find interesting about doing this for a living is that I get to listen to a lot of different people and their feelings and thoughts on a lot of different issues, this being one of them, and what's going on in China. Welcome to the show, Salih.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I want to hear a little bit from you about China imprisoning millions of Muslims in concentration camps. Let's talk about this, because this is something not covered by the press. And I also want to know how you came into this arena to talk about this and why. Because I always want to know, why is somebody speaking out and in the situation that they are? So maybe we should start there. What brought you to this issue?
Well, firstly, I came to the United States as a political refugee at the age of seven because of Chinese communist policies in East Turkestan, the overall oppression. And I got more involved growing up, especially in the past 2 years. The situation in East Turkestan has deteriorated to where China has now locked up over 3 million people in concentration camps, including over 100 members of my own family.
Wow.
So it's both a personal issue and a broad issue in terms of defending the human rights and political rights of the people of East Turkestan.
Yeah, persecuting the Uyghurs, the Christians, and the Buddhists. And so
yes.
maybe describe that a little bit, because I think it's all been lumped into one group, but there are several groups being imprisoned.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So China is the Chinese Communist Party is targeting all religions because religion is a threat to the power structure of the Chinese Communist Party, which they are atheists. So they don't want any higher power.
Right.
They don't want people to worship any higher power than themselves.
So a lot of people will say, look, if this was really going on, we'd be hearing about it, which I know you're going to laugh when you hear that because of the load of propaganda that we get and the things not talked about in the press that we should be hearing about. But what would you say to somebody that said that?
Well, you know, actually, the United States government has actually raised the issue numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
The UN has talked about the issue about almost 3 weeks ago, actually 3 weeks ago. From today, the Department of Defense came out and said that, you know, upwards of 3 million people are in concentration camps.
Right.
The State Department raised the issue. Vice President Mike Pence was one of the first ones to speak out against this issue back in 2017. So, you know, there has been coverage of the issue, but not a whole lot because of the media cycle and other things going on around the world. The attention to the issue has not, there hasn't been really much attention to the issue.
We've been hearing about tariffs. And so what's your position on the tariffs? Because I know where the media stands. I'd love to know what your position on the tariffs is.
We are fully supportive of President Trump's decision to impose tariffs against China. We ask that, you know, we encourage him to remain strong.
Mm-hmm.
We ask that the United States government enact sanctions against China under the Global Magnitsky Act for human rights violations.
Mm-hmm.
And we also ask that the United States government recognize what is indeed going on in East Turkestan as a genocide under the Ali Wazel Genocide Prevention Act, and that we ask that the United States recognize East Turkestan as a captive nation under the Captive Nations Law.
Yeah. And, there's many reasons why I support the tariffs. I think he's making the right move on that. And I think people don't realize that in what you just said, we're talking about millions of people. This isn't a few people. This isn't 10,000. This is millions, correct?
Yes. The Department of Defense said that upwards of 3 million people. But we, however, believe the number could actually be much higher than that.
Wow. And they started doing these camps. There was little press about it. Do you think a majority of the Chinese people know this is happening, know what's going on?
I don't think majority of the Chinese people actually know what's happening because, information is restricted in China itself. In fact, mm-hmm. majority of the Chinese people themselves are being oppressed by the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah. They are the party of oppression. And so with these tariffs, it'll be very interesting. I just did a piece on the fact that the tariffs actually result in some things going on in the long term that are very, very good for America. And so there's even numerous reasons why the tariffs are good. But the media, of course, is tearing it apart. And, don't rock the globalist boat, so to speak. Don't do anything to rock the globalist boat. And the media has always been the purveyor of that. But I look at this issue, and I've had a lot of people email me on this and say, please talk about this and please bring this up, because what's happening is people are disappearing. Nobody's saying anything. People can't get the information out on people just disappearing. These people are not allowed to contact anybody. We're looking at a genocide going on, and I don't think we're really aware of it in real time. Correct? We're not seeing it for what it is. We always look back in history. There was a genocide, but when we're in the middle of one, it's hard to recognize. Why is that for us?
Well, yes. I mean, in fact, many of the people don't really know the full scope of what's going on. And this is partly because of getting information out of the region is very difficult. They're mm-hmm. not even letting, foreign journalists in to freely, report on the issue. Many of them have been harassed and beaten. And it's also because of China's economic trade leverage that it has over other countries. It pretty much buys the silence of the international community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Is there any other reason why these people are being locked away into these camps other than the threat of having a higher power, higher than government? Because in the communist world, this is not okay. But is there any other threat that they've posed to? Because wouldn't they have been doing this a long time ago? Why now? Why this? Why now? In your estimation?
Well, So East Turkestan, many people don't know that East Turkestan was an independent republic prior till December 22nd, 1949, when the Chinese communists invaded and took over the region. Mm. Over the years, China has been colonizing this region. And then mm-hmm. post-1990s, you had, the fall of the Soviet Union.
Right.
And this encouraged, this gave hope to the people of East Turkestan that they would restore their independence as well. Mm-hmm. So China has always had this fear of losing control of this region since they occupied it.
Wow. And so,
Since they occupied it, and mm-hmm. The region sits, it's the cornerstone of China's One Belt, One Road strategy, or the Belt and Road strategy, which is China's strategy to engage in, global imperialism, global domination through trade. So East Turkestan is very crucial to that, and an independent East Turkestan republic would kill that dead in its tracks. And that's why China is afraid of these people, and that's why China is doing everything that it can to stamp out and eradicate the Turkic identity of this region.
Wow. I think we'd be surprised to know how much is at stake with the Silk Road. How much is at stake, because there are definite locations that they want to absorb. There are definite obvious advantages for them as a country. I'm speaking about China, to establish this. And it seems that this piece of territory is right smack on that same course, right? So,
yes, I mean, it's, in fact, it's a barrier. You know, it's a barrier that separates East and West.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, you know, if China fully destroys East Turkestan, it will have been able to get access to the West and, you know, start slowly engaging in colonialism. It already has been engaging in neo-colonialism in parts of Africa,
right,
in Central Asia, in Southeast Asia, and in Pakistan. They're buying off, you know, using their loans to debt trap countries, and then taking over these countries' strategic ports and infrastructures that will be useful, you know, potentially in the long term for military operations.
Is Trump really the only one that is recognizing this? Because I fear what the next president will do. We're so in bed with China and have been for so long. Do you fear that? Do you fear that this might be our only opportunity?
Yes. Because prior administrations have completely ignored the issue. In fact, and I don't want to talk bad on prior administrations, but they have, you know, encouraged China to continue its policies, you know, by ignoring the situation, because their silence has led China to undertake this genocide today. Had previous administrations spoke out against China's assimilationist and neo-colonial policies in East Turkestan, you wouldn't have 3 million plus people in concentration camps today.
Right. We're right smack in the middle of this in real time, and we need to start recognizing it for what it is. And there are millions of people at stake here that can't speak out. And so I'm glad you're doing that. Salih Hudaya, thank you for coming on. You come to us from the East Turkestan National Awakening Movement and in D.C., and I appreciate your insight on this, because I don't think people realize, number one, we're so in bed with China. Two, we have one hope right now, one holdout to make sure we're drawing attention and actually penalize China for doing the things that they're doing. And so I appreciate you and all your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'd like to, you know, call on the listeners to visit our website at nationalawakening.org and to follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Perfect. Thank you. I really appreciate it, Salih. Thank you. Have a great day today, and appreciate you bringing insight to this. Thank you. More when we come back on The Kate Daly Show. Don't go anywhere. Podcast available on katedalyradio.com. We'll be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is The Kate Daly Show.
She broke my heart, but I love her just saying now. Hush, hush. I thought I heard her calling my name now. Hush, hush. I need her loving and I'm not to blame now.
Hi there. Welcome back. Kate Daly Show on a Friday. A big thank you to Thomas Dykes for coming in and going over stuff with me again. It's been fun because he spent several years on the show. You're a longtime listener, and it's a lot of fun to hear him. And then thank you to Salih coming into us from Washington, D.C., talking about that there's more to it than the tariffs, than money, than what the press seems to want to concentrate on. We have a problem in real time going on with this right now, with people being imprisoned, and so drawing attention to that, I think, is a good thing. I think we need to know that this is going on right now. We have a lot to talk about, because we have a lot to talk about in the way of foreign policy. We have a lot going on here with immigration right now, and we also have Sarah did a great piece. Sarah Carter's been on the show. She did a great piece on Guatemala ghost towns. Traffickers are touting U.S. asylum laws to lure migrants away from homeland to come here. We also had a big piece come out today on the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, dumping nearly 200,000 illegals across the country. And so there's a lot to talk about. And I want to talk about, you know, with you in mind, please call up. Let me know what you would like to hit, what you would like to talk about the most right now, because truly, there are a lot of different things that we could discuss on today's show with a couple segments left on a Friday. But I'm very open today because there are, you know, I'm still reeling from the words of Kissinger, how that hasn't changed much. The manual that came out to basically describe how to perform a coup. And then we have problems in this country. And the problems in this country that have me thinking today, we had the Equality Act pass. I'm sure Pelosi's real happy about that. They always think they've done something good because they don't think. And because they are dead set on claiming that feelings are now rights, that if somebody hurts your feelings, now you can go after them and get more rights than somebody else. That's basically what it dives down into. And the Equality Act is very unequal, but they were hell-bent on passing it. And, you know, I shudder every time I hear about these bills because it's sold on the name of the bill, the name being equality. It's nothing. It's not even close. It's actually the opposite. And what it does now is it puts feelings ahead of everything, and it also seeks to parcel out groups of people for more rights than others. You're listened to if you're part of this group. You get to sue if you're part of this group, but the other person doesn't have any rights now. The other person has less rights even than you do. And that's really what's going on with the Equality Act. So as much as the pictures of Nancy Pelosi, oh, good grief, Nancy Pelosi, smiling, she's got not a brain between those two ears, and thinking that she's done something right. Maybe she truly believes it. I don't know. I don't know Nancy personally, and I'm so glad about that, to tell you the truth. Not somebody I'd ever want to have dinner with. Thanks. But there are many like her that are seeking to undermine the actual Bill of Rights and what it protects. And the, like I said, and I've said many times on the show, equality of law is the only protection that the Constitution was adamant about, because that is the only equality that can exist in a country like this where we safeguard liberty. So when we start to pass legislation like this, it makes us anything but equal. It robs us of that. It takes it away because now we're preferring one group over the other. So there's that to talk about as well. Let me go to this Sarah Carter report that she just put up. I love Sarah. And in fact, Roger Stone and I were talking about her on the break, and they're friends. And she really does try very hard to get out the truth. I really like Sarah Carter. So these Guatemalan ghost towns, she said that basically this ongoing border crisis, the cartels and the human trafficking organizations are taking advantage of the situation, and they're using the U.S. laws to perpetuate illegal immigration. And they're promising that potential migrants are guaranteed access to the U.S. from Guatemala, where they say they'll find work as long as they claim asylum. This is such a huge, huge, huge issue right now in America that the left obviously doesn't want to think about. They want to dial it down to empathy. It has nothing to do with empathy. We have literal ghost towns right now in Guatemala because ads have played. The organization of the United States, this group that seeks to, and I'm probably not getting the full title right. I'm just doing it off memory right now. But I know that they are Soros-backed and that there are 35 countries that have come together that love the idea of open borders. And so ads were playing for people to get paid to come. And we all know this. But she actually went down there. She was just coming back from here, from Guatemala. And she said, the roads are barren, stores and homes are empty, and those left behind saying they're living with ghosts. She also said, she talked about this with people, is the corruption within their government, the loss of community, and the hopelessness that's driving them from their homeland. On top of that, you have traffickers instructing all of them what to say and what to do in order to subvert the U.S. system to qualify for asylum. So we have big issues at hand. And then on the heels of this, we have the Department of Homeland Security in an in-depth report by Court Kirkwood, where the Trump administration is dumping thousands of illegal alien invaders who are storming the southwest border every day into unsuspecting American communities, despite his promise to catch and release. So that's a very interesting angle coming from Court. He said the dumping program is nothing new, but it's worsening. You know, I don't know on this, and I'm always fair to criticize Trump because I can criticize him or I can praise him based on what I feel he's doing. I'm not quite sure I can dial this just to Trump. I think it's more fair to say that there are many people involved in this little scheme going on, not just Trump. But the Customs and Border Protection doesn't have the facilities to house more than 1,700 illegals jumping the border every day. So more than 200,000 crossed in April and May. And we've discussed this on the show. But more than 500,000 have crossed since the beginning of the fiscal year in 2019. And so this deluge has completely overwhelmed border agents. And now they're spending most of their time babysitting the illegals instead of guarding the border. So now we've taken the personnel and they're doing something different on this that they shouldn't be doing, right? They should be guarding the border. So according to Breitbart, Department of Homeland Security has dumped 9,000 illegals into the heartland in the last 8 days. So the catch and release totals obtained by Breitbart confirm that through May 6th through May 13th, roughly about 9,000 border crossers and illegal aliens were released into a variety of American communities by DHS. That's DHS. Why are they doing that? And what are they, what can they do? We've got a huge influx of people. What would you suggest they do? I don't want them just dispersed into American communities without our knowledge. But they said that this indicates that at least 1,100 border crossers and illegal aliens have been released into the country every day in the past week because there's so many coming over, they don't know what to do. I would definitely say this is cause for an emergency in our country. If this is the problem and we're releasing people into these communities, it's an invasion. It has surpassed illegal border crossing into invasion. So Breitbart reported that most of the 9,000, about 5,000 dumped in El Paso, while 1,900 went to San Antonio, 1,600 to Phoenix, and 500 to San Diego, and then out from there. So the Trump administration's released 177,000 border crosses and illegal aliens into the interior of the U.S. The majority have been dropped off in San Antonio, where 69,000 of them have been released. So what's going to happen? How are we going to stop this? We have even more coming. And based on Sarah Carter's report, we have so many coming that we have ghost towns in these countries where people are leaving and being trained on how to get through and how to not only how to sneak in, but what to say if caught and exactly what they can do to get their asylum. How do you feel about this? 888-673-1450. I'm all for legal vetting. I'm all for a border. You know, I was, I've studied what happened in Berlin. A lot of people that don't believe in a border will bring up Germany, East and West Germany. East and West Germany was a division through a country. This is about the sovereignty of our entire country. This is about where America's laws start and end. This is about making sure that we can keep the legal vetting process and citizenship of this country. This was not a wall through a country to divide a country where it went half communist, half West capitalism. This is about an entire country and its sovereignty from another country. And I feel like there is a difference. So when people bring that up as justification as to why you can't why we shouldn't want a wall, I'll tell you, it's at a snail's pace for a reason. There are a lot of people involved in making sure that that wall hardly gets built and that it takes 20 more years to build it when it should have taken, it could have been done by now. This is absolutely ridiculous. Other countries have thrown up walls pretty quickly, except for us. So there's a lot of people at play here. It isn't just Trump. I hate it when people do that and they put everything on Trump. It isn't just Trump. There's a lot of people involved. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hey, Kate,
Hi.
Remember when the Republicans had the executive in both houses?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They didn't do anything, did they?
Nope, they didn't do anything. And it's even more so to say that they are two sides of the same coin.
Well, now it's all the Democrats' fault, right?
Yeah, it's always the Democrats, and never we have a hard time looking at those in the Republican Party that seek to do the same things. They just don't do it with the same speeches. Right?
Well, you know, hey, we gotta, you know, really get to the ballot box. That's all we can do.
I know that.
Thanks,
and and educate, because, you know, even beyond the ballot box, if you have an educated populace, then you have a whole different playing field. You have a whole different playing field. I'll give you kind of a case in point, and then I'll describe this when I come back from the break. If I said, "What is the Bay of Pigs to you?" Would you be able to answer that? And would you know the truth about it? I ask this so honestly. I truly do. Would you be able to, because most people can't, by the way. But if I said Bay of Pigs, what would they say? They would say Kennedy, probably the 60s. And that's where that conversation would end. We don't know our history. We don't know our history because we haven't been taught our history. And because we haven't had the curiosity to go and obtain the truth. We have more tools at our disposal now than we've ever had in the history of mankind to do research. No more traipsing off to the library to try and carve out time. Nope, we've got it right in the palm of our hand. We can even sit in our cars and do research. But how many of us out there would absolutely be able to tell you the ins and outs, the seven layers deep of all the incidences through history and what happened? Shouldn't we be able to? We're a fairly young country. We're not talking about, you know, eons of time here that we have to describe. We're talking about, you know, 220 years plus. We're talking about a relatively small period of time in which I don't think hardly any American citizens can describe the events in history that happened and why. This is our biggest disconnect. It's our biggest problem. It's our biggest cognitive dissonance issue in America right now. We should understand where we're at with this border situation. And we should understand that this is more of an invasion than it is just, parsing words over what immigration should be. We're being invaded so much so that Department of Homeland Security is dumping people in communities, and people don't in those communities don't know where they are. We have a serious problem understanding our history. We have a serious problem understanding the issues at hand now because of the load of propaganda. And that's what this is for, is cutting through it. Be right back. I'll describe what I'm talking about when I come back. Kate Daly Show.
And our talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Send your daddy don't log and roll. Your mama don't dance and your daddy don't log and roll.
Hi there, back with you. Kate Daly Show. Happy to be here on a Friday. Last segment of the show. Let's go out with a bang, shall we? You know, let's come full circle in this show today, because we started out the show talking about how to, you know, performing a coup and keep your eye on all parties. And really, I think this is a time to look with clear goggles. Even on our own cognitive dissonance, sometimes the things we're afraid to say in radio, there are some things we're afraid to talk about because of the stigma attached to it. It's difficult. And I've always said, I will always just say the truth. And if I am not on the air, I'm not on the air. I feel like there's only one way to do this. And I've got to be honest in how I do this show. But because of where we started on that, let's go back into history for just a second and talk about something that happened in history. If I ask you, and I ask just people on the street, what do they know about the Bay of Pigs? What do you think they'll be able to tell me? I don't think much. I really don't. Because I think we heard the words. If you lived in that time, if you were alive, you remember parts probably better than others right now. But you probably don't remember a whole lot in order to talk about it at length, right? So I was actually schooling my 17-year-old on this. And let me kind of give you the dialed down version of what went down. And then I want to go one layer deeper, which is really hard to hear for some people, but I think it's okay. We'll survive. Cuba. Let's talk about Cuba for just a minute, because I want to demonstrate also that this has been going on for a long, long period of time. Cuba had a big revolution in 1959. They became good friends with Russia. And Castro took over. Castro basically took over cities and towns and communities and basically got into power. So he became friends with Russia. He's not a good guy. Castro was not a good guy. So obviously, we've talked about that on the show. So they get into bed with Russia, and they're trading more and more with them. And our country started getting worried about it. This was the big reason for us to go in. This was the big reason, was that we were worried about that relationship, that location where Cuba's at, Russia becoming friends with them and having a closer location to us. And so some had to do with location, some had to do with the trading going on, the motives behind Russia getting into bed with Castro. But in 1960, before Kennedy, President Eisenhower made sure that the CIA had about $13 million to give to the CIA, Eisenhower did, to overthrow Castro. So the CIA started all their training camps, and all of those guys in Guatemala, we were just talking about Guatemala, they came into play here. And they started the training camps to train those Cubans to overthrow the government. They had a lot of money to do it at the time. And they were called, of course, counter-revolutionary forces. When are they not? They do this in every country we go into. They say they're training their people, our CIA trains their people, on how to overthrow the government because we want them to. Okay? We want them to. So Kennedy becomes president and then also extended the plan that Eisenhower put into place and then that they could do the mission. Well, when they got to the last part of the mission where the troops entered through the Bay of Pigs to get to Cuba, Kennedy halted the mission and Castro got more power. And there were a lot of people out there that were really upset with Kennedy because he halted the mission and left some of our people out there high and dry. I can understand that. I can understand that. He also was trying to investigate what was really going on because the more he was learning about the CIA, the more horrified he was getting in the things they were doing in our name. So while I don't agree with Kennedy's policies as a U.S. president, I do agree with his stance on the CIA and the fear that of what the CIA was getting away with no repercussions and absolutely had all the authority in the world to do what they were going to do and no oversight. And that's what he was learning about. So Cuba and Russia become better friends because the mission was hauled off. We had this led to the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62. Kennedy stopped the mission and the CIA was exposed in that operation and the military was sort of left out there. So Kennedy starts ordering investigations into everything and he got suspicious what we were doing, why we were doing it. Cuba had oil refineries that produced crude oil. And Standard Oil was one of them. And I'll go a layer deeper and talk about Bush's oil company, Zapata, because they work into this as well. But Cuba wanted these U.S. companies in Cuba to process crude oil that was coming from Russia because they were friends with Russia, and they refused to do that. So Castro nationalized the companies and put them under his country's control. So then we got even more angry and said to Cuba that we wouldn't buy their sugar anymore, that we wouldn't do trade with them. We would let some medicine in but and some foodstuffs, but not everything. And so there became a trade war. And then they were there was the sinking of the French ship that had the explosion. And Castro sort of insinuated that the U.S. did it. So things escalated and got worse when we talk about relations, right, that lead us to these kinds of invasions and things like that. So Cuba was in the middle of Russia trying to control trade and who got what. And there was a 13-day standoff because Russia promised to defend Cuba. U.S. didn't like that. Russia started shipping missiles to Cuba. And we almost had a big, huge war. So the CIA, by the way, actually trained CIA operative Lee Harvey Oswald to get rid of Castro. Castro learned of that plan and wouldn't let him in the country. And because Castro was supposed to kill him with a new thing that they had had come up with, and that was to give him a rapid form of cancer, the very same thing that the man who shot Lee Harvey Oswald had. Anyway, that's getting off into a whole different subject, but it's interesting how all these the ties that bind, if you will. And so then Oswald was accused. He was the patsy in killing Kennedy. If you want to go a layer deeper now, we could talk about Zapata Oil. Zapata Oil was founded in 53. And when Bush said that, Senior Bush, when he said that he was just a salesman during this decade, and there wasn't a whole lot on this decade. By the way, it's been added to his biography now that he's passed away. But he never would say he was part of the CIA, that he worked for the CIA. Only when he was head of the CIA is on his biography, but not when he worked for them. And in 1953, he did, and along with his business partners, who were also CIA, Bush and Thomas J. Devine were oil wildcatting associates, and their joint activities also really culminated in the establishment of Zapata Oil And Zapata oil was also steeped into the oil situation going on in Cuba, too. He was involved with this as well, which is kind of interesting if you think about it. The initial $1 million investment for Zapata was provided by the Lettke brothers and their circle of investors, who was Bush's father, and Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush and his circle of friends. So you had Hugh Lecky, who was named president, and Bush was vice president. And in 54, Zapata Offshore Oil Company was formed as a subsidiary of Zapata Oil, with Bush as president of the new company. And he raised startup money from Eugene Meyer. Eugene Meyer was publisher of the Washington Post. His son-in-law was Philip Graham. Remember the movie with Meryl Streep, who played Catherine Graham? Okay. Do you remember the Project Mockingbird that took over Washington Post in the 50s? Huh. It seems that all these people play together in the playpen. Isn't that kind of interesting? You got money going to Zapata Oil, which Bush owned, who is the son-in-law of the publisher of the Washington Post, who ends up taking over the Washington Post with his wife, Catherine. And that's who Meryl Streep, I don't like Meryl Streep, that's who she portrayed in that movie that was just recently out. So Zapata Offshore accepted an offer, and I could probably go into the wily details of this, but Zapata Corporation split in 59 into independent companies called Zapata Petroleum and so forth. And it was headed by Bush, funded with about $800,000, about $1 million. So he moved his offices that year to Midland, Texas, from Midland to Houston. And in 63, Zapata Petroleum merged with South Penn Oil and other companies to become Pennzoil. Okay. Bush's company, Zapata Oil, who he worked with other CIA members at the time, turned into Pennzoil. So, So in 62, well, let me go back. The U.S. government began to auction off mineral rights to the areas in the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico and the Central American coast in 54. And in 58, drilling contracts with seven large U.S. oil producers, including wells, 40 miles north of Cuba, near the island, near an island, Quetzal, in July 59, Cuba's Batista government, okay, was then overthrown by Fidel, right? We just talked about this. So Zapata won a contract with Kuwait, and in 62, Bush was joined in Zapata Offshore by a fellow Yale Skull and Bones member, Robert Gow. And by 63, Zapata Offshore had four operational oil drilling rigs called the Scorpion, the Vingaroon, the Sidewinder, and the NOLA. And in 1960, Jorge Serrano of Mexico was put in touch with Bush by Dresser. Now, you'll recognize Dresser because that's where Bush claimed to work in this decade, but never went into any details. And George W. Bush kept saying they were poor at the time. They weren't poor. They were not poor. Anyway, he traveled around a lot for Dresser. Dresser, actually, I have clips from real articles from this time period outing Dresser as a spy company for Russia, actually. And so this is the very company that Bush worked for. Before he so-called got into politics, he was actually working for the CIA. So the creation of this new company in 1960 actually was in conjunction with Pan American Petroleum, who Zapata had a previous offshore contract. And basically, it kind of goes into this. In 64, Zapata Offshore Oil had a number of subsidiaries. And those subsidiaries, Zapata International, Kavala Oil, all of these different subsidiaries went into play. This was very much part of this whole arena, this problem, back when you look at the Cuban Missile Crisis and also the Bay of Pigs. Bush was not a fan of Kennedy. And Bush was not a fan of letting Cuba retain its power at the time. It's kind of interesting, the liaisons and the relationships. There was definitely a reason that Bush was in Texas. There was definitely a reason that the assassination took place in Texas. And there was a lot at stake for these oil companies. And so, you know, I was talking to my son about this, and we were kind of going over this and having actually a great hour talking about this. And it really comes down to trade and money. It comes down to power, and it comes down to liaisons and who you're trading with and why. And so when we look at all of these different situations of politics going on, and when you're hearing in the news about the relationships going south, and these are not acts of war, okay? Because somebody doesn't want to play ball doesn't mean that that could translate into an act of war. And I know you know this. I'm preaching to the choir here, and I totally get this. But I think this is for a lot of new people or people that you know that may need to hear this. It always is going to come back to money. It's always going to come back to power. It's going to come back to trade, and it's going to come back to what you can acquire in a country. There's controls that if we would stay out of these things and let other countries do their own bidding and have their own sovereignty, just like the fact that we want our own sovereignty and why we're fighting hard for this, even with a border wall, to maintain our country, why then do we not let other countries do their own bidding, do their own relationships? Why the interference? Why are we constantly intervening? The CIA really became a group that we send out to demonstrate these coups. When they say it's for intelligence, what a joke. When they say it's for, defending our country and keeping our country strong, what a joke. We're doing everything to weaken our country and our own sovereignty by breaking up other people's sovereignty. That can't make sense. There's nothing about that that can be right at the end of the day. When we're talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis, when we're talking about all these events in history, if we don't know what happened and why it happened, how in the world would we ever see what's going on in the Middle East right now? Going back to the 80s, we can talk about what was going on in Central America. Same exact issues, same exact problem. Iraq, Libya, you name it, just name a country. And I'm going to guarantee that for some reason we're selling to the American people that we're strengthening our own country by being involved in all these other countries and taking them over. It only weakened us. Can you imagine the strength we would have as a nation if, you know, that dirty word, you know, isolationist that they like to use? It's not a dirty word. We actually would have a very, very strong nation. No one would mess with us because we'd have a very strong military, even if we weren't doing anything and spending gobs of money. And also, we would have a strength within the borders that we have if we cared about our country enough to shore it up and stay out of other countries' business, but also shore our country up by delivering a border, making sure that we have strong boundaries. And there's nothing wrong with boundaries. That's why I don't understand some of these people in the news that only go to the empathy card and play on emotions. We have to strengthen our own country. One of the reasons I actually do like Trump is that Trump is willing to recognize that. And I do like him for that. Whether or not he can get other people to play along with that, with all the globalists he's beside, I'm not quite sure. But I do know, and I do have a little faith, that there are people out there that still love our country. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope you go spend time with your family. That's truly the most important thing. We can't change a lot of what's going on, but we can have a work of art in our own families and in our own homes. Be faithful, be fearless. See you back here on Monday.
You've transformed your outdoor space into